Previously on Worlds Away.
The Amity was attacked by the ghost ship, and we have a course that was charted for a nearby asteroid after that attack.
Well, I don't know where the entire crew of the Amity is, but I do believe we've located one of them.
Leela, is there any chance that this is a problem that maybe indexing can help solve?
This is Captain Shen of the Aventine ship Perseverance. We've detected your vessel on sensors. You're interfering with an Aventine flagged merchant vessel and are ordered to cease your actions immediately.
We received a distress signal from the Aventine vessel Amity on all channels and responded immediately. We have one survivor on board the Valiant. We are happy to turn them over to you at any time.
Very well. Prepare for our arrival shortly. I will be there myself.
I think that maybe there are just like a litany of warning signals flash up, and then Mara just goes to work and lands that bad boy maybe a stone's throw away from the other spacecraft.
What should I be on the lookout for?
You find a metallic case in there, and when you open it, you see it is a gun case for a pistol that's currently empty.
Real, recognize real.
I think we see apprehension and determination because you don't generally index with someone who is not awake.
As you regain your senses and learn to control this form, how do you react to flying?
I wonder if it almost feels like the spacewalk from earlier, except there's no wind in space.
You need to leave this place. All of you, as many as you can.
Can I see their face?
When you walk to the front of the child, you can take in their face. But when you do so, the space that you're in flashes for a second, almost like a glitch. And in that moment, in your mind's eye, the child is replaced by a monstrous figure.
While Mara examines further, I want to keep my focus on what's ahead.
Do you have your pistol out?
I do.
And Mara, I think we see you crouch down, maybe touching your hand to the ground. And that's when you see that this shallow pool is actually colored a deep crimson red. Welcome to World's Way, an actual play storytelling podcast. I am your game master, John Ossip, and here with me, we have Haley Daria.
Hello.
Lauren Wilbanks.
Double hater.
Michael Morales.
Happy Pride again.
And Moshe Tara.
Eid Mubarak.
Ooh. I forgot about that.
Oh, it was that or Happy Daddy's Day.
Thank you. Thank you for what you've done.
Oh, no.
Thank you for your service.
All right. Well, we'll see if this stays in or not. All right. Arno and Mara, when we last left off, the two of you had followed the flight plan from the Amity and had found the missing shuttle on an asteroid in the Lua system after commandeering a shuttle of your own from that vessel.
Theft.
And the last... What? Sorry?
Oh, I just yelled theft because we stole it. Oh,
okay. Yes. And the last thing we saw was Mara finding a pool of what appears to be blood on the floor of a cavern cut into the rock there. And so what I want to know is, how did the two of you react to this, or what are you saying to each other when Mara finds this?
I think the first thing that I want to do when I see the blood is see if there's a trail of the blood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know if it's going somewhere else, basically.
Is there like a drag mark, you know, like a like something has been smeared? Are there drips? Hmm.
Footprints, that sort of thing.
Describe this bloodle.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So I think I have an answer for that, and I'll give that to you. I think that is something that you don't have to roll for. And I guess my question, though, is before I give all these answers, is there anything else that you're trying to investigate on the scene, or is it just like, where's the blood going?
So I guess what I want to figure out over here is, like, are we in any immediate danger? Is there like a place for them to get the drop on us if there's somebody else? Because now that we've found this blood, it's just like the tension has escalated and it was already pretty high.
Okay. So I want at least one scope it out roll, I think, up to whoever wants to do that, whoever we think is most scoping it. I know that Lauren probably has a better modifier for this.
Yeah.
I got a plus one.
I have a plus two, but I haven't used my scanner yet. So for the scanner specifically from like the rules, right? I have three uses. When you scan a strange environment, organism or device, extended use, and you have advantage on scope it out. So I think this counts as a strange environment.
No, that I agree. So go ahead. And if you want to use that, you can definitely get advantage. So go ahead and mark off a gear slot and a use of the scanner.
Okay. So I have advantage. So I'll add one more D6. I have my plus two modifier. This is only going to go good, right?
I'm confident. It did go good.
It did. It went very well. So that's a 5, a 5, and a 4. So I'll take those two 5s. It's a 10 plus 2 is a 12.
Okay.
All right.
Full success. So for scope it out, when you take your time or use sensitive equipment to closely study an object, situation, or person, you can roll plus calculating on a 10 plus. Your investigation pays off and you get to ask 3 questions from the list. And those are, where is my best escape route, way in or way past? What should I be on the lookout for? What's my enemy's true position? Who or what here is not what they seem? Who's really in control here? How could I best end this quickly? Or who or what here could be a useful opportunity? So, Lauren, go ahead and take your time, but when you're ready, hit me up with those 3 questions.
Oh, there's so many. Yeah, there's so many good questions to ask here, right? Mike, willing to open up the floor to your suggestions as well.
I'll let you take lead on this, actually.
Okay, no worries. I will.
It's your role. I have a couple ideas, but like
Yeah. No, it can be collaborative. So where my head's at, where is my best escape route, way in, way past? I want to gather some information on how to navigate this space in the most logical way, right? I don't want to go down here and get lost. If I could somehow gain an advantage on, again, navigating the space, getting to either the people or our beacon, what have you, I think that one makes sense. I think then what should I be on the lookout for makes sense, because I don't necessarily, like, it's between that one and what's my enemy's true position, but we don't necessarily have enemies in here, right? So just what to be on the lookout for in general.
What to be on the lookout for like, what caused this pool of blood?
Right. So, and then the last one, I would say, how could I best end this quickly? Again, that kind of ties into the first one, but just reemphasizes the point that I want to be able to locate the things that we came here to locate, the people, survivors, hopefully, the beacon, and do that in the most efficient way, like, possible.
Okay.
Call order.
So you good with those three, or any other discussion on that?
How do we feel, Michael?
I feel good about that.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to lock those in.
Okay.
Final answer.
Final answer.
Alrighty.
In Mara's mind, at least, there are no enemies in here, ignoring the pool of blood.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, we shall see.
I mean, so I think, I think this is maybe like...
There's an abandoned ship. Somebody was left unconscious. Someone took one of the vessels over here. There's a pool of blood. It might not be the people who escaped over here. They could have been chased, but like, no enemy? None?
Right, but we didn't do any... I think, again, this is like Mara's mind, right? We didn't do anything wrong. We're actually here to save the day. We're here to get them off the asteroid, theoretically. And now, even more so, there's this... Like, someone is obviously injured, so we could easily swoop in here and help out.
I cannot wait to play off that.
So here's what I think happens. So, Arno, I think you're looking down at the pool of blood, and you realize it's a pretty substantial amount of blood on the floor. It looks like at least one, possibly more than one person had a catastrophic injury here. And that's the only explanation for there being this amount of blood in a space, especially considering the fact that there's no air in this area. So anyone that was in here would presumably have been wearing a vac suit. And to have this amount of blood bleed out, not only from an injury to them, but out of the vac suit, something must have gone terribly wrong here. Mara, I think that you are running the scanner, and I think that you're detecting a small metallic object somewhere to the side of this sort of open area in the cavern. And I think when you go and you bring the scanner over to that, you reach down and pick up a small shell casing. It appears to be the size of a shell casing that would come from a pistol. And do you bring this over to Arno, or what do you do with this once you find it?
So it's just the shell casing was off to the side on the ground?
Yeah, it seems like it was ejected from a firearm and somebody didn't pick it up or try to collect it or couldn't find it.
Gotcha. I think after glancing around the area, right, looking for any other clues, if she doesn't see anything obvious, I think she'll walk over to Arno and okay. hand it to him.
So, Arno, I think you see Mara hold up this shell casing in the gloved hand of her vac suit. And you maybe like flip it over to look at the base of it where the firing pin is. And there's a series of letters and numbers around that base. And I think it takes you a few seconds, but looking at this, you recognize this as a Aventine military issue piece of ammunition. Do you say anything, or how do you react to that?
I think I just look at it and mutter more to myself than anything. Damn, Avies can't help themselves.
Oof.
So after that, do you, like, what do you do with the shell casing? Do you pocket it or give it back to Mara? What do you, do with it? Okay.
Can I tell anything about the gun case, the casing itself? Like, can I, let me put this, are they using like heavy equipment over here, or is this like a standard sheet, like just a sidearm type situation? How much firepower are we talking?
Yeah, you absolutely can tell. That round, that shell casing, is a pistol round. So it seems like something that would come from a handgun that a single person could operate.
Dr. Belova, I don't know if this was self-defense or something else, but be on the lookout.
And I just want to ask one more small question. The blood appears human, right?
It's red blood. So, okay.
All right.
I don't know. Well, actually, I mean,
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, you picked, actually, I'll give you more. You picked what should I be on the lookout for, right? Yeah. And so maybe that includes the inverse of that.
Mm-hmm.
The blood is human. You detect it and it's like, okay. Oh, I'm sure the scanner can maybe pick up.
Scanner.
It's like got the blood type on there. You know what I mean?
Okay,
it's like
all right.
Showing some molecules and shit. Yeah, it is human blood.
All that shit.
So, Mike, I think then you pocket the shell casing and look up. And I think that I had sort of described there being lights on the helmet, maybe the shoulders of the suit, and they kind of illuminate down the hallway. And so I'm going to have more about end this quickly later. So I want to put a slight pin in that, but put the way that you asked it, Lauren. So this was kind of like, how do I get where I'm going? Mm-hmm. This cavern, I think there's a lot of turnoffs and windy paths to this place. I think it seems like it was started in a natural crevice in this rock and then expanded for sort of efficiency of the construction. It seems like this was a build of necessity rather than something that was, you know, we had unlimited resources to develop this. So it seems like this was just the easiest location to develop this place. But you're able to look and you see the following on the ground, sort of following the lights from Arno's suit. You see that running along the floor of this passageway, there is a wide, solid trail of the blood. And it seems like it must have been, again, either one or more than one body that was dragged along the floor that would have caused this kind of trail. But you also see, looking closely, you see multiple sets of footprints that appear to be going in two different directions. And those footprints are made with the blood. And so sort of following that, you see that those all are going in the same direction, but the footprints are going both ways. So it seems like somebody must have like made multiple trips along this pathway, but they end at where that pool of blood is. They don't extend further back toward the ship, or you might have noticed them earlier, like toward where you parked the shuttlecraft. Okay. And so it seems like following that path, that's the way to get to, you know, wherever either these bodies are, or or this body is, or where this case might have been taken.
I think Mara will turn to Arno and say, well, shall we follow the ominous trail of blood to what is almost certainly our untimely demise?
I couldn't think of a better setting.
As you move down this hallway or this passageway, does Arno have a weapon out? Or what does this look like?
Yeah, so I think I'd mentioned in the last episode that I was leading with the pistol as my gear for this, and I still have that on me. I've got it out in front of me just to react to anything, that sort of thing. And I've got it sort of just trained forward. I'm following my line of sight.
Okay. What about Mara? Does she have any weapons, or she just... How is she sort of proceeding down the hallway?
I think that narrative-wise, Mara still has her scanner on.
Yeah.
Her sensor. But I think she has a pistol, like, in her holster on her hip, right? Like, I have that piece of gear on me. So it is available to use, but it's not, like, trained and at the ready like Arno's is.
Okay. So Arno's kind of in the front and has the pistol out and is kind of leading, and you're cautiously following with the scanner.
Yeah.
So, Nasir, last episode, you were on the Amity attempting to repair that ship, and that was when the Valiant connected you with Captain Shen of the Aventine cruiser Perseverance. And so I'd like to know what your game plan is for these last few minutes you have before that ship arrives at your location, both in terms of what you're trying to do with the Amity, and also if there's anything you'd like to do to try to buy Leela some more time in the medbay.
So I think that we find me like frantically working in the engine room with the intention of getting one good burst of movement out of the Amity. I want to be able to turn the Amity on and set its thrusters in one direction. I don't know how long that will last, or I'm not really concerning myself with whether or not there's longevity to that, or whether or not like it would be able to do life support systems and like maintain a crew, but just like whether or not I could start the thing. You see me like digging through the tools there. I think I probably grabbed my tactical pack from when we got the part from the Valiant last episode. And I'm like trying to jerry-rig this thing to get it to turn on for me. And I, while I'm presumably like under something, like looking up, working on it, I just try to contact Leela.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Mm. What do we think it looks like when the call is missed on a slate?
Well, I feel like it was probably like ringing and blinking and stuff. And then maybe after it doesn't get picked up, Leela probably has Nasir, Arno, and Mara listed as like priority contacts or something. So maybe it's like going to continue to blink on her screen.
Okay. I'm going to come back to what I think it looks like on your end.
And oh, then, sorry.
I mean, no, it's all good. I like that. But so Nasir, on your end, maybe it's like it's ringing and then it just says, you know, missed call or no answer on your slate.
At that point, Cassandra, can you give me visual of the med bay?
Before I answer what Cassandra says to you, do you have to do something to like open up the connection to Cassandra? I think in a couple episodes back, you had mentioned that currently their communications were cut off in the ship. So are you kind of like letting in Cassandra at this point?
Yeah, I think I am letting Cassandra in now as I'm like repairing this ship.
Okay. Do you have to like click something on your slate to activate this, or how do you do that? What do we
see? I think we're like well beyond clicks as a species.
Yeah, John.
Last dying millennial over here.
Yeah, I think when I say Cassandra, that okay. is enough of a command to initiate Cassandra in the suit.
And open the connection with the ship.
It's worth noting that Cassandra can't see what's happening on my end because I physically removed the camera in my vac suit.
Okay. So I think what you hear is certainly transmitting images to your suit now. And then like maybe it's like on the inside of your on your visor, right? Like kind of a heads up display where it's on the glass itself. You see a kind of overhead angled image of the med bay. In the center of the camera, I think you see one of the beds of the auto docks in the med bay. And resting in that, you see the woman that you rescued from the Amity last episode. But I think you look further down in the frame and you see on the ground, I don't think you see a full body, but you see an arm on the floor. And in the hand of that arm, maybe we see the slate with like the missed call indicator on it.
Cassandra, can you patch me through to Captain Alba immediately?
Of course, Nasir.
It's worth noting, by the way, at no point in this conversation have I stopped moving. I think at this point, my work is reaching like a fever pitch. There's like some very improvised engineering happening.
So I think when the connection switches over, you hear a bleep in your in the audio in your suit. And then you hear Captain Alba say, Nasir, we don't have much time left. What's your status on the Amity?
I'm on my way back immediately, Captain. I need you to send someone to the med bay ASAP and stall for as long as you can. I believe Miss Malik may be incapacitated.
You hear, like, sort of addressed off of, you know, off of the mic, I guess, but sort of, like, you get the kind of side speak, but you hear her say, Davis, get to the med bay. She might be in trouble. And then you hear the sound of footsteps in the background.
How would I board? I'm going to do a flight back, right? So I just say, have them prep the airlock as soon as possible. And I will hang up. And I think like I'll turn back to the engine of this ship in a last ditch effort with my slate, trying to see if I can get this thing, if I can get the thing to turn on, like if I can get proof that this thing would turn on for a remote start.
So you had mentioned you have the tactical pack. Does that give you any advantage under a circumstance like this?
What the tactical pack does, reading the tactical pack for a moment, is that it lets me choose a move from the tactical pack list, which includes you find just the right piece of mundane equipment for the situation in your pack, a rope, a flashlight, a crowbar, or you repair a piece of equipment or basic technology, or recover one hit point on a vehicle, or first aid, you heal the I'm knocked out harm on an ally. So given that I don't think you're just going to let me heal one on this vehicle or repair this piece of equipment, we could say it gives advantage instead.
I think that's right. I think in terms of a piece of equipment or basic technology or recover one hit on a vehicle, which is usually things like the Grizzly or something like that, I don't think that that includes a ship. But I'm going to meet you halfway and give you advantage on this. So I think go ahead and mark off a use of the tactical pack and I'll go and let you roll with advantage.
Merciful DM.
And I think it's going to be act quick. All right. Or it sounds like you're acting quick given what you just said.
I mean, I think act quick, but it's up to you.
Yeah, that makes the most sense for me.
That was my third gear slot, so.
Uh-oh.
So that is a 9.
All right, so act quick. When you use your instincts or reflexes to avoid danger and negotiate through danger toward a goal, and I think in this case the danger is the clock, you roll plus slick. On a 7 to 9, you do it, but you have to choose one from the list. You're off balance or rushed, and you have disadvantage going forward. You've left something behind, I'll tell you what. You're pushed to your limits with the effort, suffer one stress.
Okay, so I'm torn here, right?
Mm.
Because I could just give you a
Are you
a
torn
present?
Between what's narratively good or are you torn between what's mechanically dangerous?
The
here?
Thing is all of this is mechanically dangerous.
That's
the
true.
The question I'm trying to decide is if I want to give you a present, which is like...
I don't know between the three which one I like better in this particular circumstance for what it's worth. I always love the leave something behind one, but I do feel like the others are also really good here. So it's totally your call.
So because I'm at 3 stress, I really like the idea of going into this next situation on the verge of a calamity. I think that
you like that. Interesting.
I mean, the alternatives are I go into this situation
saying a lot about
disadvantage.
The
right. Like the alternatives. Here's the thing. I go in on the verge of a calamity. I go in at a disadvantage, or I leave something behind on this ship we really weren't supposed to be on. They're all great.
I mean, bad. Sorry, not great. I misspoke. They're all bad.
He's salivating. He's literally wiping his mouth right now.
So I'm going to say that I've been pushed to my limits with the effort and I suffer one stress.
Okay. I actually feel like that was what I would have said is the narratively best one, too, because I feel like you are stressed the fuck out right now. But I am scared of the stress meter being at 4 also. So appreciate you praying for you.
If it makes you feel any better, I haven't even read the calamity list. So who knows what I'm
like. That does not make me feel better, fortunately, but you know.
Yeah. Don't worry. It's really not that bad, though. Like, what was so bad about the last one?
Yeah, that's true.
Mike, you got the choice out of it. I'd say I was helping. Okay, let's move on.
Can I just describe this really quickly?
Yeah, please go for it.
So I think you see like a small handheld device essentially like hooked up to the engine to get readings from it. And I repair something and I don't get anything. And I do like a quick weld on something to make it try to move and nothing happens. And I just get frustrated and I just kick the shit out of a panel right at my foot. And then the readings pop up on the little handheld device.
Yeah.
I'm like, I just look up at the ceiling of the ship as though there were an up in space.
Yeah.
Grab the little device and like run to the airlock, where the airlock point is, to try to get back to the ship before the other captain arrives. Captain Shen.
Okay. And just to clarify, you have this set up to be able to activate this modification remotely in some way. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So, Leela, at this point, I want to cut to you. And I think we find you inside the same strange reflective space, sort of like a reflecting pool that you can somehow walk on. And I think in the distance, we hear a kind of intermittent rumbling, kind of like a thunderstorm. You know, maybe from your perspective, when you were inside your landscape, inside the studio, you knew that there was a thunderstorm outside. But I think we, the audience, see that this rumbling is at the same frequency that maybe your slate would be ringing or vibrating as Nasir is trying to call you. Before we get to what this looks like, though, further, I want to come back to something at the end of the last episode, which is that I asked you to roll into the abyss and you got a mixed success. And that means that you can ask a question to the abyss and dark visions will lend you insight. But then I get to ask two questions from the list in the rules that's called The Abyss Stares Back. And so before we describe the scene further, I want to know, what is your question for the abyss? Or put another way, what are you trying to learn from inside Nadia's mind?
Well, what I'm trying to figure out is what happened on the ship. So, like, what happened on the Amity?
Okay. So I'm going to get to that answer. But before we do, I want to describe this location further. And I think you kind of find yourself having experienced an in-world smash cut after having met the child last episode, after they briefly appear to you as a monster. And so I mentioned that in this space, the floor is the same as what you saw in that location. But as you're trying to navigate Nadia's unconscious mind, I think this space begins to appear to you as a maze. And so I'd like you to describe what that looks like for us.
Like, what I'm thinking about is kind of stone ruins plus overgrown hedges. So I feel like there are tall hedges that go above the height that I could peek over, even trying to jump up. So I think there are these tall hedges that are overgrown and kind of maybe even, you know, have other like vines on them or other things that indicate that this is overgrown. But then, and also in some places, there's also stone ruins. So maybe it's like part of a wall that the hedges have grown around, or maybe even, you know, what could be the remains of a fountain or something and more of an open part of the maze. So I think that's kind of generally the vibe.
And I guess, so kind of two questions on that. One is, mm-hmm. you know, you mentioned kind of vines or these stone walls and kind of things made from natural objects that we have in our world. And mm-hmm. I guess my question for you is, what is the color or the appearance of these things? Are they green vines like what we have on Earth, or is it something different?
Mm. The hedges are a deep green, like you would find on Earth, but maybe some of the vines are actually the blue that we've seen on Feronia.
Hmm. Okay, I like that. And then I guess another question, when you're looking out across this maze or as you're navigating the maze, is it that all of these obstacles or the objects that make the path of the maze, are they already in place, or is the maze changing in some way as you move through it? And if so, what does that look like?
I think there is actually a bit of mist as well. And okay. So I don't know whether things are moving or not, but I think Leela only has relatively small amount of visibility, so unclear.
So I think in the far distance, I will add one thing, which is I think that you can see occasional flashes from what looks like a thunderstorm. Okay. And, you know, I think maybe you're inferring that that's the same storm that you saw outside the window in your studio.
Mm-hmm.
But I have one last question for you. Is the child with you as you navigate the maze? Like, do you see them next to you, or do you just hear their voice inside your head?
I don't think Leela sees the child. Sometimes maybe Leela thinks she's chasing after the child and that maybe she sees a, you know, whisper of them, you know, running just beyond the next turn. But okay. She's not even 100% sure if that's what she's seeing. But she's definitely hearing the voice kind of talking to her.
So I think we see you navigating the maze. And do you want to describe maybe like how you're progressing? I know you said you're chasing after this wispy figure, but what does sort of your initial progress look like?
So I think when Leela, you know, as you said, experiences this smash cut, she just finds herself in the middle of this maze. So I think she doesn't even know maybe what direction she's really running to, but she just kind of picked one and has started going. I think she's, you know, maybe has the sense that there's one direction that she came from, and so she's just kind of heading that way, but it's hard to tell if she's actually made any progress.
And at some point, do you say anything or try to communicate with the child, or do you wait until they say something to you?
I think she yells out the first time she sees what she thinks could be the child running ahead of her and just says something like, hey, wait. But I don't think she is necessarily doing much else. And I think maybe she's kind of more worried about, is there something else in this maze? So maybe she's staying relatively silent, you know, unless the voice is talking to her or something.
So I think when you yell out, hey, wait, I think you hear a voice and it kind of sounds like it's coming from all around you. And maybe it's almost repeated multiple times, like it's layered, I guess, is the best description I would give it. And you hear the voice of the child say, you should understand that the maze is inside your mind. The path is less important than the choices you make along the way.
I think Leela is going to kind of growl a little bit in frustration. Where am I? What is this place?
You've spent a great deal of time building structure, a place you feel safe. This is what lies beyond that.
I think Leela is going to slow her running a little bit and say, okay, if we're in my mind, then who the hell are you?
I would say that we're travelers, but I understand that you prefer a name, division. And so, if you must, you can call us Doran.
Okay, Doran. You've given me a name, but you haven't really answered my question.
Leela's pissed.
Pissed?
Mm-hmm.
I think when you raise your voice, I think the walls of the maze start to shake. Maybe we see like little parts of the rock from the stone walls crumble down a bit.
I wonder if Leela kind of feels a degree of instability at that. And maybe she's going to stop running altogether and just try to collect herself. And maybe she's standing next to some stone that has started to crumble, and she's going to put her hand up against it and just try to ground herself a little bit and just be silent for a moment.
I think after you steady yourself, you hear the voice again, and it says,
I'm finding it difficult to answer your question. How would you say who you are? But if you mean where did we come from, it is a place far outside where your species has explored.
I think all of Leela's efforts to calm herself are going to fail at the mention of your species. That kind of, I think, is just going to strike her, and she's going to kind of whirl around and say, my species? Who are you? Where is Nadia? What have you done to her?
We had no intention to harm her. After stopping their vessel, when we tried to reach out to her, something went wrong. Perhaps she was hurt by a problem in their ship. Or maybe she lacked the language to communicate with us. In any case, we only intended to give her the same warning that we gave you.
I think Leela is going to start walking again and then speed into a run and say, I don't know who you are. I need to find Nadia. I need to get out of here.
So I think as you say that and you're running, you hear the child's voice again. And I think they say,
your and Nadia's minds seem to be linked, a method of communication similar to ours. If you leave the maze, it would stand to reason, so would she.
But now I want to ask you my question. For what does your character crave forgiveness, and from whom?
This episode. All of you.
That's you, Mo. You crave forgiveness from this episode.
I am my character, John.
So, I think that one is a little bit tricky, because I don't know if Leela would even admit this to herself. But I do think that there's something about the way that her relationship with Paolo played out that is starting to kind of bother her. I think the way that she acted after basically the last flashback that we saw, and kind of how that conciliation session with the two people who own the tech company, how that went down, is part of the reason that she got nominated for the Minerva Project, but it's also not something that she's proud of, I think. Or it's something that she's starting to not feel as proud of.
So I guess as a follow-up question to that, as you're sort of increasing your pace and working your way through the maze, what do we see in the maze that reflects this?
I think the maze is starting to make less sense, becoming a little more surrealist, and where maybe things are starting to appear that don't necessarily make sense in the setting. So I think she sees Arnis Bastens just lying on the ground next to a hedge. I think she sees a metronome on a stone pedestal that looks like it belongs here, but then the metronome doesn't. And so I think she's just starting to kind of, like, the maze is starting to make less sense, and it's starting to kind of bring in some of the things from her real life.
Hey everyone, it's Mo. Thank you so much for listening to Worlds Away. This game has been a blast to play, and it has been wonderful to get to share the story with you. If you're enjoying Worlds Away so far, you can help us out by spreading the word to friends and family. And if they are starting to get annoyed with the fact that you keep talking about us, that's okay. That means you're doing it right. You can also support us by giving us a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other platform where you listen to podcasts. And if you want to give us a shout out on social media, you can find us on most platforms at Worlds Away Pod. We're online at worldsawaypod.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the episode.
So at this point, I want to cut away to Arno and Mara. So following the blood trail down this passageway, I think there's several sort of turns in the rock, and then eventually you get to a point where the like shape of the walls becomes more uniform. And it seems like this was the area that had to actually be more constructed out of this rock face. And following that trail for another 30, 40 feet or so, you eventually reach a four-way intersection. In terms of markings, there are no signs on the wall or anything like that. But as you shine your light across the rock, you see that the corners of this intersection appear to be spray painted, kind of as if from the initial construction. But this paint is significantly worn down at this point. Looking straight ahead, on the right side of the forward facing path, you see a marking that says Main Depot, along with an arrow in the direction of that hallway. Further to the right, you see a marking that says ASP, or ASP, in all capital letters. And to the left, you see a label that says Decon and Suitport, where the and is a plus sign. And that is the direction where the blood trail leads.
To the Decon and Suitport?
Correct.
Dr. Belova?
Yes.
Does it strike you as odd that this asteroid is more developed than you'd expect a random floating rock in space to be? Or is that just me?
No, Lieutenant Hines, we are well beyond odd at this point. So, do we continue following the blood trail, or... And I guess she'll kind of gesture to the other directions.
There's a chance that whatever's bleeding might not be bleeding for long. If we're going to get answers, we might need to move quickly. Dr. Belova, I'd like for you to get my back, if that's all right.
What's on your back?
Dr. Belova, we're not certain how many people there are here, or if anyone may have gone down the other corridors. I'd like to continue to keep my focus forward, but I don't want anyone to surprise us from behind. Can I count on you to watch my back?
I think she's gonna like nod deeply and she'll say, I misinterpreted, my apologies. at this point, I think she'll put away her sensor and she will pull out her pistol. And she's kind of got it held perfectly in front of her, exactly the way that she was trained before she came on the Minerva Project. And so at that point, she'll go, and if Arno's facing forward, like towards the depot, she'll stand back to back with him and she'll say, "Okay, walk slowly and I'll walk backwards."
Dr. Belova, I'm certain I know the answer to this question, but have you ever pointed one of those at another person?
I don't have your experience using firearms on other human beings. That's the heart of what you're asking me.
No. It's not. It never gets less scary, Dr. Belova. Don't focus on hitting something. Whatever is looking at you is going to be much more scared facing that down than you will be of it. If you make a loud noise and you get something close to its location, that should buy us some time. You don't need to be perfect in an emergency situation. You just need to create an opportunity.
What exactly do you think is going to be at the end of this trail?
I don't know. But oftentimes, when I'm surprised in a situation like this, knowing what I need to do when something happens and spending less time thinking about it can save a few lives. You strike me as a thinker. Don't make perfect the enemy of good here.
I think she'll just kind of nod.
All right. And Arno, you're sort of leading the way then down the hallway that's labeled Decon plus Suitport, sort of in the direction where the blood trail led.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think you move carefully down the hallway a few dozen feet, and again, kind of shining the lights from your suit helmet. But after a few dozen feet, the hallway opens into a wider space. It's still oriented in the direction that you're walking, but now the width is big enough for some structure at the side of the passageway. Closest to you is a prefabricated structure that appears to be a sort of inflated, reinforced fabric, maybe similar to concepts for some low-cost space habitats that we have today. At the ends and along the sides of this structure, you see a few small plastic windows, along with, on the side that's facing into the hallway, four of what are called suit ports, which is where the back of your vac suit can lock into the side of the structure, and that lets you climb in and out of the suit without use of an airlock. Further back down the hallway, you see what looks like plastic sheeting tied up on several metal supports, sort of creating a separation or almost rooms. And that is where the blood trail leads to. So past this structure and back into this back area.
Is there any lighting?
Not other than your suit.
Is there any that we can find? Like, are there lights that are just not on?
Like, oh, are you looking to see, are there lights like strung up or something?
Is there a switch? Yeah. Is there a handheld, anything, any sort of centralized system that can illuminate the space?
Yeah. So I'm not gonna make you roll for that because I'm not in a position to give you a thing yet for this. You see strung up along the walls, there are like, you know, those
they're like caged.
Yeah, exactly.
Light bulb is caged and it clips. Yeah,
and
I
it's
know
like
exactly
on the power
about.
Cable, like dangled on the wall. You see those. However, you do not see a switch. So it's like where this is controlled from. You don't see that readily available to you, but you do see that there are like there could have been lights here, but they're not on right now.
Gotcha.
And let me just ask, as far as the trail for the blood goes, and maybe this is a rule, but does it look like it's moving forward at a consistent pace? Does it look like they've stopped a little bit, like they're staggered steps?
I think it's a little hard to tell, but I think maybe at this point you can see certain parts of the trail. You know, the footsteps are running both directions, right? So you see kind of footsteps in the blood as if somebody was stepping in and out of the trail. And I think you see that at certain parts, the trail actually kind of separates into two distinct paths. So I think one of them seems pretty steady, and then I think another one seems to be a little bit more ragged. Like it was a struggle to deal with. Maybe like from fatigue.
Okay. I think I press on. Dr. Bolova.
Yes?
I think the trail is about to end here. We might need to focus on what's in front of us for a little while. Thank you for having my back.
Well, I still have it, but I'll pay attention to the front as well, too.
All right.
I think the shot is we kind of see from the other side of this tarp, and maybe we see Arno, the edge of your helmet and the body of your gun kind of round the corner. And then I think the rest of you rounds the corner as well, and we can see what's inside the room. Most of the space is actually open, save for what looks like a few metal benches, along with two of those metal crates, very similar to the shape of the crates that you found on the Amity in the cargo bay. The back of the room, however, has two of what I'll just describe as showers, but I think they're a little different from what you'd expect to see, like, in your quarters on the ship or in, you know, at a home on Earth. There's sort of a very wide, completely overhead shower head, and at the bottom of it, there is a pipe that leads from where the drain would go to a sort of, like, cistern or tank at the back of this. So it seems like the water is recirculated through this system, and it looks like something that you would use to wash space dust or any other particles off of your vac suit to avoid getting it in somewhere that it shouldn't be. But the thing that you see, Arna, maybe Mara, then we see you around the corner as well, is to the left of these showers, you see two bodies on the ground, and that is where the blood trail leads.
Shit. Do they look dead?
They're not moving, and there is a large amount of blood around the bodies as well as in the trail. And I think looking at them, you see gunshots through the vac suit.
I think Mara will start to walk over pretty quickly. And I think she's kind of maybe hustling over, right? And she drops her grip, so to speak, and she kneels down or tries to get close to get a good look.
Yeah. So I think you kind of look in through the visor, and I think you see that their faces are, it's like mostly ashen from the blood loss, but I think you also see some, it's almost like red spider webbing, and this is what you would recognize as a consequence of being exposed to a vacuum for an extended period of time or for several hours.
Okay. So by taking that all together, they had crazy amounts of blood loss, and their vac suits lost air and pressurization.
Correct.
I think Mara will, kind of still crouching maybe in front of them, will turn to Arno and say, "They're both dead." She'll stand up.
John, I want to check the floor for more casings.
I think you look around, and, you know, Mara had the scanner, and maybe I'll kind of continue that. You don't find any more shell casings in this area.
And we only found the one at the entrance, yeah?
That's the only one you found. You know, unclear if there could have been more or if some were taken away from there, but you only found one. One thing I will give you on that, though, is you only see one gunshot wound on each of these bodies.
I'm sorry, you said, were they, like, clamoring towards something, or were they,
like, dropped there, or does it look like they, like, leaned against
It looks like, I'll give you that. I think that their arms are kind of outstretched above their head. It looks like they were dragged there.
Funsies.
Is the case somewhere in the room? With the beacon, or?
There were two metal cases in the room. I don't think I said anything about the beacon yet.
Sure. I think that a sense of ominous imminence kind of sets in, if it wasn't already there before. And I think she will kind of hustle over to those cases and try to get them open to see if they have the beacon.
And I think on these, there's no lock, there's no sort of security on them. You flip them open, and these cases are filled to the brim with supplies that you would expect as part of this decontamination process, or like cleaning a vac suit or getting stuff off a vac suit. I think maybe there's a couple things that are open at the top of the case. So it seems like somebody did use this facility for some kind of, you know, washing right. something off.
Can I tell how long these bodies have been here?
I think, again, from the bruising on their face, I think it seems that they've been dead for a few hours at this point. It's hard to be more precise than that.
Okay.
But you've not seen, like, the long-term degradation that would have happened from, like, an extended exposure to vacuum. But right. it seems like they've been depressurized for that long.
And remind me again, what else is in this room?
There's just metal benches, these crates, and then these kind of like decontamination showers that are like to wash the outside of a vac suit.
Why did they bring them here?
And I think I'll just say this is space dust or asteroid, like pieces of this asteroid could be very abrasive. And so, you know, that like the presence of this doesn't necessarily surprise you if there was some kind of space habitat or something happening here. I think it's more of, oh, the whole picture is the part that's weird, not just the showers.
I think that after looking around, right, and not seeing any evidence of the beacon that we're looking for, Mara will turn to Arno and say, we should attempt to find the beacon and get out of here as quickly as possible. If you don't have anything else to observe in this room, I suggest we quickly leave.
John, before we leave, I want to kneel down by the bodies and I want to check for something.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have on their person a weapon or a holster for a weapon on their suits?
I think if you're looking at the suits, I think I want you to go and roll scope it out.
If I'm going to roll for it, can I add a second question that if I don't know if this changes what you're saying, but
I think that, I mean, I'm just saying that you're like, if you're looking for that, because I might give you more than just giving you a yes or no answer to that, if that makes sense. So you could ask all the questions from the list.
I'll take an 8. Yeah.
Okay. Nice. So an 8, that's a mixed success. Ooh. You can ask one question from the scope it out list.
Huh. Okay. What should I be on the lookout for?
Okay. So I think I'll give you a couple things on this. And you said you were like specifically looking to see if they had like a holster or a sign of a firearm.
Yeah. The question I was going to add originally to this is just like, does it look like that these are the vac suits that were, that could have been missing from the airlock on the Amity, or are these like something different?
Yeah. You look at them and I think you immediately clock that they're vac suits from the Amity. But I think you're looking at them and trying to see, is there any sign that they had a weapon or like a, you know, had a holster for a pistol? And they're completely unarmed. So it seems that they were essentially shot unawares or executed.
Sheesh.
Yeah.
You do find, though, holstered on one of their sides. I mean, we had described kind of the space slates, Mara, like the EVA slates.
Yeah.
So maybe it's like on a tether. You do find one of those.
Oh, shit.
And when you tap on that slate, I think you see that the last thing that someone attempted to do with this, and that this attempt was unsuccessful, is they tried to send a message on a frequency that any ship would pick up in the area. It's something, this is similar to, we call it like the guard frequency, or like what the Coast Guard listens to for accidents. And you see that the timing of that transmission would have aligned with maybe 30 minutes or 40 minutes after the Valiant arrived at the Amity.
Hmm.
I think there's one more thing I'm going to give you for your role, which is, remember I mentioned the footprints, there was bloody footprints also.
Hmm.
I think you, after the kind of more ragged of the two trails, like the one that it looked like was more of a struggle, maybe because it was the second of the two that was dragged here, you see footprints head to one of the showers, and then there's no blood that leaves the shower. So it seems like they washed the blood off of them.
Dr. Belova, I'm starting to get a clearer picture of what happened here. Three members of the Amity's crew came onto this asteroid. The two that we see dead here were likely killed by the third. They had enough time in the conversation to start a distress call on an open channel before they were executed. Whoever brought them here went to the showers, washed the blood off, and left this room. They might still be here in this facility. They might have found another way to leave the asteroid. This mystery is now a murder, too.
Nasir, I think we see you in the airlock of the Amity as that is depressurizing and you're getting ready to exit the ship and head to the Valiant. But I think while you're in there, we see you looking out of a kind of porthole that's at the outside door of that airlock. And as you're doing so, I think we see a shuttlecraft approach the Valiant and the sort of cargo bay lift lower down from the Valiant to accept this shuttlecraft on board the ship. And I think putting two and two together, you can assume that this shuttlecraft is the transport from the Aventine cruiser Perseverance carrying Captain Shen to meet with the crew of the Valiant and to retrieve the injured crew member from the Amity. So as the door to the airlock opens up, what do we see from Nasir?
I think we see Nasir like take a slight step back and then just sort of jettison himself forward into the void with as much force as he can muster.
Like max speed.
Yeah, I mean, I assume our vac suits have some like minimal thrusters for stabilization and yeah. direction.
We described those in the yeah. previous episode.
And so I think it's just like max speed.
Yeah.
Right? I think like he is trying to get to the Valiant before the shuttle bay fully opens. It like intercepts the shuttle and closes.
Oh, interesting.
He's like trying. I mean, like he's not waiting, right? Like he's trying to do this as quickly as possible. I think he's making the calculation. I'm making the calculation, right? That like they're probably focused on the ship opening up in front of them as they're about to board a Republic vessel. And they probably won't see like a single human being in the backdrop of all of space.
Hmm. Okay. So I think last time when you transited from the Valiant to the Amity, I think we said it took a couple minutes of the kind of slow drifting of the sort of moderate bursts from the thrusters. If you're going to book it full speed, I think that could do what you're intending, but I think it's also a bit riskier. So I do think I want you to roll act quick for me.
All right.
It feels like literally act quick, I guess, or go quick.
Yeah. I like it. That's a 12. 10 on the dice plus 2.
Awesome.
So you actually teleport there, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you have that on your spell slots or like what's up with that?
Crossover.
Yeah.
Nasir doesn't have a lot of experience in the void, despite having a lot of experience on these foreign planets. But this is an incredibly high stress situation full of unknowns. And I think that that's where Nasir in his trauma-filled life is at Zen, right? So, like, Nasir leaps into the void aiming at the Valiant and, like, puts thrusters on full, trying to, like, not be seen and just, you know, guns it, full focus on like, solve problem in front of you.
Yeah. So I think we see, like, you get a little more than halfway there. And then I think we maybe see like an oh shit look on your face, because I think you realize that, well, if you're more than halfway, that's when you had to start applying the opposite thrust to not hit the ship. And I think we see you kind of really gunning it the other way, trying to slow down. And maybe you're kind of like rotated around enough to skim on the side. But I think you grab onto, there's probably some kind of handle right above the airlock outer door on the Valiant, like something designed for a rescue or for a spacewalker to grab onto to position themselves in front of the door. And I think you're able to kind of grab onto that with your fingers at the last second and get to the door. So are you trying to just like get out of your vac suit and look presentable as quickly as possible? Or what do we see happening once the airlock is pressurizing?
I think that I am in some like Minerva Project gym shorts and a tank top. And okay. I'm not actually putting any other clothes on. Like, I'm trying to rush to the wardroom to get there at or before Captain Shen arrives.
So I think what we see is the camera shows Captain Alba and Captain Shen moving down the hallway on this top deck of the Valiant. I know that Captain Shen is protesting. What do we think that this is like? Or what's like Captain Alba saying to him to kind of try to calm him down as they get to the wardroom? I know I'm like outsourcing my responsibility here, but I want to kind of describe the scene and see what we see when the doors open.
I think it's like our crew boarded a foreign vessel. Republic protocols state that they must visit the med bay for a full examination and disinfectant. I think we're playing the role of the Republic. So I think we are all bureaucrats who's like burying him in rules and like playing into the stereotype of what the Republic.
Exactly.
Just, you know, not the actual med bay.
Did I say?
You said the med bay.
That's what I'm saying. They're in the med bay. They're in the med bay. That's why he can't go to the med bay.
Yeah, and they're naked right now. And that would be gross of him, right?
Okay. So I think we see the door open up, and then you're like, what does it look like as you're in this room, like waiting for them, Nasir?
I think it's me sitting very casually leaned back on the wardroom couch with a drink in my hand, and like there's already a glass on the table, but I'm like wearing essentially what Mo is wearing right now. Just sort of leaned back. Captain Shen, it is an absolute pleasure to have you on board. Can I get you a drink?
I think he responds sternly, not while I'm on duty.
Of course.
Mr. Badok, perhaps you can help me where your captain has been so unable. I demand to see our citizen immediately. No more excuses. If they're in the med bay, you should take me there right away.
Cassandra, can you pull up the vitals for our guest on this screen here? And I will look at the captain. Captain, I apologize. As you can see, members of the crew who were in a boarding party have to undergo a full examination as per protocols. I myself just returned from the medbay. I apologize for my state of undress. We will have to wait until my fellow crew members have finished their examinations before we can allow anyone in the med bay. I was taken care of first, so I would be able to meet you here. As you can see, and I'll gesture to the what I assume is like a smart board behind me or like a smart slate behind me, we have the vitals for your crew member right here. You'll be able to monitor them with me until such time as the med bay is available. And frankly, I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have or even to give you a tour of the ship if you'd like.
I like how Nasir is, you know, trying to put on his best host vibes, but he's still in a tank top and gym shorts.
Yeah, like it is a weird juxtaposition. Like he looks like ridiculous right now.
Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, like that's part of the bit, right? Like it's great.
It sounds to me, I know you just rolled a minute ago, but it does also sound to me like you're trying to use promises, guile, or charm to manipulate someone into doing what you want. So I would like you to once again roll plus slick.
I feel like Nasir should get advantage because his guns are out.
I feel like Nasir should not get advantage because this guy's really pissed. So, but I hear that.
But I think I will say it's really believable, right? And I do have we're leaning into the stereotypes.
Well, let me say this: if you do have a playbook move of some kind that would help you here, I would entertain that. But absent that, I think you just got to roll straight.
Does he have anyone with him or is he by himself?
Oh, that's a good question.
I feel like he wouldn't come alone.
I think he has two attendants with him. Like,
I
was gonna say,
I think in the last episode you specifically said that he could send like a certain number of people with him. I forgot what that number was.
Oh yeah. Do you remember what you said? I don't remember either. Damn.
Fuck.
I think I said two, but I can't quite recall.
If you said two, or if we don't remember, let's say it's two.
So my question to you is, can I discharge crowd pleaser to try to manipulate two people in a crowd?
They're not a crowd. They're not a crowd.
All right.
Is it three's
a
crowd?
They're not a crowd.
Three's a crowd.
I hear the argument, but
all right,
no.
Three's a crowd. Three's a crowd. There's only two. Three's a crowd. I got
you.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
That is an 11.
Oh, okay.
Oh, excellent.
Thank God. 9 on the dice plus 2.
Damn, we okay. sucked ass at rolling last episode. This episode, we are slaying it.
And you jinxed it.
Yeah. It's, again, this is like just in time for the ending fuck-ups. You know, this is how Worlds Away does
I'm
it.
I'm going to exclusively roll Act Quick going forward. I actually have skill.
It's like I actually only am allowed to roll Slick. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, that was either Act Quick. That was Manipulate, right? So, yeah, like, I rolled a Slick manipulate. Roll.
Yeah. Okay. On a 10 plus, they can choose to either accept your offer at face value or ask you to promise something, and they'll do what you want if you agree. I think before I get to that, I think Cassandra pulls up the vital signs on the kind of hollow screen on the table. And, you know, I think he's looking at this, but it strikes you that he's not a medical doctor and doesn't really know what he's looking at as he's looking at these vital signs. But I think he says, "What's her current condition, Mr. Baydock?"
She was asleep or in some kind of apoxic coma when we found her. Her oxygen levels were being restored in the medical bay of the Amity. We brought her here, given that our facilities are fully running. In the interest of being forthcoming, I will note that on our journey to the med bay, we encountered security drones that we were unable to disable remotely, and we may have caused some slight damage to the hull of the Amity in an effort to reach the medical bay. Of course, the Minerva Project will compensate the Aventine government for damages we caused to the Amity. And I think I'll pull up a picture of the security drones from Arno's drone.
Oh, interesting.
If okay. I can.
The series being so generous.
So I think the two kind of lackeys that came aboard with Captain Shen, I think one of them is a tall man with pale skin and short cropped orange hair. And the other is a woman with dark brown skin and sort of long hair tied back in a ponytail. And I think the man with the red hair is kind of tapping on a slate, like taking notes in this meeting between the two of you. And when you said that about the drones, I think we catch for a second him kind of look over to the woman and then like look back forward, concerned. But then I think we hear Captain Shen say to you, "Mr. Baydock, for all of your government's propaganda, it is well known that an Aventine ship's medical capabilities are far greater than anything you would find on a vessel like this."
Ooh, burn.
"That said, I will give you," and I think he kind of looks down at his slate, "5 minutes to finish your tests, after which I'm going to insist to see our citizen. Until then, I believe you offered me a tour."
"It would be my pleasure, Captain. And I am going to start giving him a tour of the Valiant, starting with, like, the mess, I guess."
I think we kind of see, maybe it's, like, not something that you hear, but we see on camera. I think we see the captain lean over to the man with the red hair, and he says, "Record everything you see." And then the three of them follow you on this tour. Leela, where do we find you in the maze at this point?
So I think previously we saw the maze kind of starting to devolve and get maybe a little bit more abstract even. And I think that has continued. So now the hedges are not as all-encompassing. So there's maybe gaps in the hedges where, you know, you wouldn't expect them to be. And again, there seem to be more and more kind of modern objects or objects that Leela would recognize from her daily life scattered around, but it still seems like she's still running in that same direction.
Okay. And if I can add one additional detail, I think as you're kind of looking around, occasionally the like either these objects that you're seeing in the sort of path of the maze or on the walls themselves, you get that kind of rotoscope effect that I described when you were inside the mind of the creature on Feronia. So maybe it's sort of a translation issue as you're navigating this. What else are you asking or saying to the child, if anything?
I think Leela has been silent for a while and just thinking a lot. But then after that kind of long pause, I think she'll say, it seems like everything will be different when I get out. Did you mean what you said? We need to leave? All of us?
As many as you can, yes.
Where? And I think she's, you know, still running, kind of breathing heavily. Where do we go?
That is a choice I can't help you with. But it should be as far away from here as you can travel.
And I think you get the sense, because again, this is in your mind, Leela, that the here in that answer, it does not mean the Lua system or the Valiant.
We've been here for generations. We've built cities. There are people who've never been back to Earth. This is the only home they know. Can't we find a way to coexist?
So I think that you'd said that the child's not with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think you can, like, see anything. I think you get the sense of a disappointment in their voice.
Mm.
But they say,
that is true, and your relatives on Earth have been there for far longer. But they will also have to leave this place if they want any hope to survive.
You mean we should... And I think Leela's gonna stop and just... Her feet are gonna almost be, like, rooted to the ground. What do you mean, Earth? I thought you were talking about the Verge. We can't leave Earth. We're from Earth.
These objects are weapons you have made. What Nadia's ship was carrying. They likely cost you time. But this was inevitable after you began to use what matters most.
I think Leela is annoyed at this non-answer. She asked a very specific question and is frustrated that she doesn't feel like it was answered. And so I think she's going to kind of look up, look around where she's standing, because there's no physical Doran nearby, and just yell out, Doran, enough. Stop speaking in riddles. What are you asking of me?
I think when you say that again, the walls kind of shake in the same way that it did before. And it may be, like, more severely.
I think this time Leela is not going to try to calm herself down or ground herself in any way.
I think you hear the voice say,
I think you misunderstand us. Our warning is only an attempt to help. You could choose to remain here, and there is nothing we could do to change that. But if you do, the harm to you would be incalculable.
Okay. You're warning me. What are you warning me about? What will happen if we don't leave?
We said that Nadia's ship was carrying something dangerous. Something that could worsen your danger. By stopping them, we were trying to buy you time. The threat is from far away, far at least for you. But this distance is only enough to affect the time, not the outcome. The closest term you would have is shepherds. For a long time, far longer than all of your lifetimes, they have watched over this place and many others. They ensure that its inhabitants continue to perform their purpose, which in turn furthers theirs.
Shepherds? There's another race. There's another species. Is that what you're saying? We're going to be attacked by another species? A sentient, conscious, malevolent species if we don't leave right now?
Your word malevolent ascribes an intention I believe is misplaced. The shepherds have long believed that as life grows around a star, so does its lustre. By doing so, that life performs its purpose. But when that life goes against its purpose, by taking what it is intended to create, then the shepherds will act to stop this and to maintain the existing order.
Okay. I think Leela is going to say, so we're a biological factory. Our only purpose is to cause luster creation. Everything else about our lives, our accomplishments, our sorrows, our creativity, our love, all of that is nothing. Is that right?
We are not sure if that is exactly what the shepherds believe, but I am surprised at your reaction, given your own history.
What is that supposed to mean? And I think there's an edge to Leela's voice that wasn't there before.
Yeah. I don't think you get a response, though. And I think at this point, the maze actually sort of grows to surround you. And I want to ask my second question now, okay. Which is, what terrifies your character to the core?
I think what scares Leela the most is the idea that one day she could be completely forgotten and that no evidence of her existence would remain.
How is that reflected in the maze?
So I think the way that Leela copes with that fear is through her art. And so I think we would start to see kind of evidence and artifacts of her art and paintbrushes, canvases with, you know, paint on them, blank canvases just kind of scattered along the maze.
Do you try to pick any of them up or try to use any of the painting equipment?
I kind of feel like Leela is trying to run away from it. And So I think seeing that, she kind of speeds up even more.
So I think maybe you have to like push your way through some of these encroaching vines. And I think you're kind of fleeing where you see the sort of remnants of the painting and the paintbrushes. And maybe in the background, I think you're getting closer to the exit and we see a flash of lightning. And maybe we briefly see some text appear that is too far away to read in one of the paintings on the wall behind you. But eventually, I think we see a sort of rectangular outline forming in the distance, kind of cutting into the edge of the space. And as you approach this outline, I think you realize this is the door that you use to enter the sort of deeper part of the landscape. And the lines around this door are narrow at first, but as time passes, I think you see them grow thicker and brighter, like the sun is just behind it. What do you do, Leela?
I think Leela is going to step towards the door, turn around and take one last glance of the entire expanse of what she just, you know, the maze and everything she was just in. And then she's going to reach for that door handle and push open the door.
So I think as your hand extends out to the door handle, I think you hear the voice in your head one more time. And it says,
you value expression so much, but many times in your past, you've chosen to act for others, haven't you?
I think Leela's jaw tightens and she pushes forward and doesn't respond.